This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand. We are at the Democratic Party State Convention in Long Beach at the Edison Theater with Josh Barrow, business columnist at New York Magazine and host of KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. Nomaki Konst, who is board director at the Matriarch PAC. It's a new PAC aimed to increase the number of progressive working women in office. And Gustavo Arellano, feature writer for the Los Angeles Times, a frequent contributor on KCRW. Hi, you guys. Welcome back.
Hola.
Okay, it is impeachment season, appears to be, and so I want to ask you all how you think impeachment is factoring into the Democratic side of this presidential contest, and I'll begin with you.
Wow. Well, I would say that it's not great for the Democrats or the Republicans, and part of that has to do with the other elephant in the room, which is Joe Biden's name popping up over and over during impeachment. So, you know, I think if you watch the impeachments, which I assume nobody in this audience actually watched because it was like watching paint dry on a wall, that was intentional. The Republicans don't want the ratings, the Democrats don't want the ratings, but I think the Democrats ultimately want to get the vote. And the vote, you know, in the House, of course, you know, because the House is controlled by the Democrats, is going to be in favor of impeachment. Where the Senate goes, you know, most likely they're going to be big question. You have senators from Utah who are critical of Trump. You know, I guess we have to see how this plays out legally as well. But ultimately, I think the Republicans are going to be focused on keeping the Senate, and what happens with the president happens with the president. From my guess, with the Republican Party.
I think impeachment matters very little for the presidential race. My impression from seeing what political reporters say they're hearing on the trail, what candidates are asked about on the trail, it's just not coming up very much. It's not something that the presidential candidates are having to discuss very much. And then the impeachment polling moved a lot a few months ago when we got this brand new scandal around Ukraine. For there was a period a few months ago where it looked like, you know, there was an activist core in the Democratic Party that really wanted the president impeached, but the polling on impeachment was bad for Democrats and that looked hazardous. That's just completely changed. The basically the entire anti-Trump coalition, or nearly all of it, has coalesced around the idea that the president should be impeached. And so it's like one of many other things. It's like it's sort of like often there's just one poll question now that people listen to anything and you ask them about the NFL or anything like that. And really just people hear the question is, do you like Donald Trump or not? And so the impeachment question has sort of converged on that. So I don't think it's politically hazardous for Democrats to impeach even in competitive districts. And I also think it will sort of feel like ancient history by the time the election comes around. The Senate trial should be done by probably sometime in February, so it'll be 9 months on when we have the election. And then the question, you know, if you vote Trump out of office, the question of whether he should be impeached essentially has been mooted because you have voted him out. So I don't think that it's very important either way for how Democrats either will choose a nominee or how that nominee will perform in the November election.
It's anticlimactic. The whole question that the United States had for the past year, will the Democrats try to do impeachment? And it seemed like it wasn't going to happen after Mueller, then Ukraine pops up, now it's happening, and we know how it's going to end. The Democrats are going to impeach him in the House, the Senate's going to absolve him, end of story, we're done in February, off to the races. Trump's not going to win any more voters off of this because he's been crying witch hunt all this time. All the time the people that he's been saying that, the people are going to be with him. The Democrats, I'll say this with the Democrats, at least the ones who really wanted Trump out of office, they say, okay, now, thank you, Pelosi. Like, we believe that you're going to be with us against Trump. So if anything, I think the Democrats get emboldened more than the Republicans win from this.
I just have, you know, one big question here. If the way that Donald Trump is reacting is as if he's in crisis, the way his staff is reacting is as if he's in crisis, is there going to be a moment, I don't know presidential historians on the panel as far as I know, where he could actually have to step down? And would that be good for Democrats or Republicans?
I mean, I think that when you look at the impeachment polling numbers during the Nixon administration, you know, Nixon left office with a 25% approval rating. So he kept half his base all the way through. And even a few months out, he had much higher numbers than that. So I think the political effects are the same, which is that the Republican Party will abandon the president if there gets to a point where it's more damaging to the party to keep him than to toss him.
That would have the poll numbers would have to move. 95%, right?
Or something he likes like to that? Say 95. It's probably closer to 90. But yeah, he's partly that's, you know, party ID is not quite the same thing as race or various other, like, people will sometimes, part of what's happened with Trump is that people who used to say they were Republicans now just told pollsters that they're not Republicans. So partly the loss of support among Republicans that's happened with the president is not showing up as Republicans saying they don't like him. It's showing up as people saying they're not Republicans anymore. But yeah, no, the broadly it's correct. He is holding on to a large enough political base. And if Republicans betray him in the Senate and remove him, he will make their life hell as they try to elect Mike Pence or whoever else. So the president's numbers would have to be a lot worse than they are right now for Republicans to look at this and say, we're better off going through the civil war in our party and removing him than sticking by him. So I think I also think removal is very unlikely, regardless of the merits, unless something happened to shift the polls. But the polling numbers have been weirdly stable over the last 3 years. The president's approval numbers don't move around that much. And maybe that's actually not that weird, because, like, why would your opinion on Donald Trump change? Like,
he is who he is when he was elected.
We knew who he was, and people formed their views, and they basically stayed the same.
But what is all this doing to the so-called independent voter? And I know you say, and you're right, that people say they're independent, but they actually vote with one party or another. But there are people who are the so-called Obama voters who went for Trump, like people who are persuadable along that line. What does this do to them? And those voters are especially attractive in these kind of Rust Belt states that the Democrats need to win.
I think at that point, it just boils down to policy. All Trump has now, great stock numbers and Democrats are evil, witch hunt. That's where it depends for the Democrats to then say, look, we have policies. Like, you were with Obama at one era, then you were Trump because you didn't believe that there was going to be change. But we have actual change, whether it's Medicare for all, whether it's the Green New Deal or whatever. So I think the Democrats, whoever the candidate's going to be, has to have some sort of policy that's going to speak to those Rust Belt voters and whatnot.
And one thing to keep in mind that hasn't been highlighted enough is that turnout was lower in some of those states. It's not so much that they flipped, and they did flip. There were many voters who did flip, but there was also a large chunk that stayed home. And so that, I think, is why the progressive base, this is exciting to see this kind of this energetic base, you know, even whether younger or older, they're likely to turn out. I mean, how many of those Rust Belt voters turned out for Bernie Sanders and voted, you know, in more open primaries for Bernie Sanders and then voted for Trump or just stayed home?
I just go back to those New York Times polls in the battleground states, and they found about 15% of the people who responded said that they might vote for either side, but really only 9% of the respondents actually made different choices when you gave them, you know, they said they would vote for Biden, but they'd vote for Trump over Warren, or vice versa, but vice versa was a lot less common. And it broke down into a few groups. You had the affluent voters who think that Warren is too far to the left. You had non-college white voters, many of whom agree with statements like, I think political correctness has gone too far, or I think a lot of women candidates are just not likable. So that's, you know, there could be sexism at work there. There can be sort of broad cultural factors that are often not even really about public policy. I like to think of, like, the president saying, I'm going to let people say Merry Christmas again. Like, of course, you can say Merry Christmas. That's not policy, but it reflects an idea that people have about the culture and they vote on it. And then it's some of these non-white voters. Two-thirds of the persuadable non-white group is men. And it's who have much less unfavorable views on Trump than people in the broader non-white demographic groups do. And also, to some extent, you're looking there in that persuadable group. You have a lot of voters who say they approve of the president's performance on the economy, even though they don't like him, they don't approve of his broad performance. So that could be a cross-pressure that people are dealing with. They basically feel materially satisfied with what Donald Trump has done, but they don't like him very much. And I think that's, to Gustavo's point, that's going to depend a lot on the specific pitch from the Democratic candidate.
Okay. Yeah. Final question. I'm going to put you all on the record. Who's going to be the Democratic Party nominee?
Oh, man.
No pressure. Gustavo.
I think Warren after all of that, because again, it all goes to the young voters. If they're going to come out, they're going to want to go with someone who's more radical than moderate. So Buttigieg and Biden, I don't think, do it. But I think Warren will. That said, I don't know if Warren can beat Trump.
Amiki.
If we don't go to a brokered convention, I believe it'll be Bernie Sanders still. Because he's not polled accurately. And if it does go to a brokered convention, I have no idea. Deval Patrick?
Really?
I'm just kidding.
I think it's going to be Joe Biden. And I think it's crazy that nobody says they think it's going to be Joe Biden, who leads the polls almost all of the time. Like, it's not definitely going to be Joe Biden, and, like, I can see paths for a lot of these candidates, but I feel like, you know, it's been, like, the erasure of Joe Biden, the front runner. People are acting like the front runner in this campaign doesn't exist, which I just find completely bizarre.
Sleeping giant.
That's it. Okay. That is it for a special edition of KCRW's Press Play from the Democratic Party State Convention. Thank you to Gustavo Arellano, features writer for the Los Angeles Times and frequent contributor to KCRW, Josh Barrow, business columnist at New York Magazine and host of KCRW's Left, Right, and Center, and Nomaki Konst, board director at Matriarch PAC. And thanks to Ben Christopher, politics reporter for Cal Matters. Special thanks to Julia Wang and Intertrend for hosting us at the Edison Theater here in Long Beach. Michelle Aloy and Sarah Sweeney produced today's show. Mario Saavedra is our technical director. Stephen Colon engineered our live broadcast. Thanks to our events team, Melanie Makaivi, Olivia Surnow, and Jason Groman. Thank you all for being here. I'm Madeline Brand.